You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We appreciate you being here. And really, since yesterday, there have been a lot of conversation and bewilderment over the USA Today piece by one of our by our next guest, along with several of his colleagues. Kenny Jacoby, Nancy Armour, and Jessica Luther have written an explosive piece under the heading LSU Mishandled Sexual Misconduct Complaints Against Students, Including Top Athletes. We've gone through it already today. Some of the most serious allegations involve Darius Geis, and certainly I don't think we know where this is going, but there's certainly a great deal of unknown still yet to happen. Obviously, some of this has been dealt with by the federal government, looking into Title IX allegations. Let me just get out of the way, because nobody can do a better job of describing all this than our next guest, Kenny Jacoby. Kenny, thank you for the time. Really appreciate it. An extraordinary piece of journalism here. Good evening, and most curious about how long you and your team have been working on this.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. This is an investigation that started at the beginning of the year when we got some tips about some happenings at LSU, some allegations made against football players. And really, over the course of 2020, we've been trying to track those things down. And finally, that resulted in a big story yesterday. We had published something specifically about rape allegations against Darius Geis in August. But this is, you know, a more expansive piece.
Yeah, and one thing that just really knocked me over when it's really pretty high up in the article, when you said at least seven LSU officials had direct knowledge that wide receiver Drake Davis was physically abusing his girlfriend. But they sat on the information for months while Davis continued to assault and strangle her. I mean, that is one strong and powerful comment.
And that was one of the most disturbing parts of our reporting. We say seven LSU officials had direct knowledge of this. In some of those cases, it was either the woman or Drake Davis reporting it directly to LSU officials. We were able to document that Drake Davis had texted Deputy Athletic Director Virge Osberry in mid-April 2018, that admitting to punching his girlfriend. But it appears Osberry did nothing with that information, and it didn't come out until 4 months later, after police had gotten a search warrant for Davis's phone. And by that time, Davis had continued to assault and strangle this girlfriend on at least three more occasions.
In doing a story like this, certainly the university is well aware of your presence. You mentioned, along with your colleagues, that LSU declined to make any of these coaches available. I know as a reporter, you're not trying to read or infer anything. You're trying to report what you have and get as much information on the record as you can. But what was that experience like trying to deal with LSU officials on this story?
I mean, it's been very hard. We've had open records requests with LSU for, you know, more than 6 months, I believe. We were denied access to basic police reports that have always been public records, and we had to sue LSU to get access to those. And even then, LSU would redact, you know, everybody's name from the report. They didn't answer any of our 4 dozen questions. We asked to interview 10 people who work at the school, did not get any of them. And, you know, really, we learn things when LSU, you know, after our story comes out and they'll go do an interview with another outlet. So it was very frustrating working with LSU. They really did not, were not open during this process.
Now, certainly you saw and heard what Ed Orgeron said yesterday. He gave a statement. How would you describe his involvement in this story, at least in terms of the allegations?
Yeah, so when we talk about things like seven LSU officials knew about Drake Davis abusing his girlfriend, Orgeron is not included among them. And even with the Darius Geis rape and allegations and allegations that he took nude photos of a woman and shared it with others on the team, all of those incidents were reported to athletic department officials, but typically to other people, you know, a coach of a different team or an assistant coach or an athletic department administrator. And so while all of this was going on in Orgeron's program, he isn't one of those people directly implicated in our documents here. So I think you can take you can draw your own conclusions about that. Either he's innocent here and truly had no idea what was going on, in which case, you know, you could argue that he failed to detect these problems within his own program. Or at worst, you know, he knew about it and didn't do anything and was actively complicit.
Kenny, of the people that are directly implicated in the allegations, are any of them still employed at LSU?
Yeah, most all of them are, I believe. And in fact, several of them have gotten promotions since. I mentioned Virge Osberry, the deputy athletic director, who sat on that confession from Drake Davis for months and months. He was promoted to executive director of external relations from the university last year. I believe Mickey Joseph, who is one of those people implicated, an assistant coach, was promoted to, I think, co-head coach, or I'm not sure exactly what his new title is, but I do believe he received a promotion. And all the administrators, those people are still there.
Kenny, I obviously, reporting on a story like this never ends, because when stories like this come out, you may or may not hear from other people who are not as willing to go on the record. But where, I know you mentioned the Title IX investigation. Where is that, assuming it's anywhere?
Do you mean the one that?
Yeah, I mean, there was originally one, but I mean, what's the status of the federal investigations?
Got it. Yes, in 2015, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights launched an investigation into LSU for the way it handled a woman who came forward and reported that she'd been sexually assaulted. The woman's complaint said that she was not made aware of her Title IX options, including, you know, for investigation or academic accommodations when she went to campus police. And that's what the feds were investigating. 3 years after that, in 2018, the investigators closed the case, saying that the woman had stopped responding to them. By that time, the woman was no longer a student at the school, and, you know, 3 years is a long time. Something happened during that time. Obviously, a new federal administration took office, and there was a lot of turnover in the Department of Education. But nothing really came out of that investigation. Our reporting found that many of those same problems are still happening at LSU.
So as of this moment, there are no other, or there are no investigations other than what the president announced yesterday. There will be an independent investigation by outside counsel.
Correct. We're not aware of any others.
And I realize I'm asking you to make a judgment for the federal government, but it is extraordinary when you read your story today or yesterday, and you juxtapose that with where the federal government was. Now, I realize you have to have witnesses. You just can't you can't make up things out of thin air. But it seems like if they were still investigating, they might come to a different conclusion based on what at least we've read and you've reported.
Yeah, you know, some of these laws are pretty unequivocal. LSU policies and Title IX and another law, the Clery Act, require reporting of these allegations to designated officials on campus. And, you know, our reporting has established that those things did not happen because many of the women told us that, you know, they were never contacted by the Title IX office. So you can't have an investigation if you don't speak to the person at the center of it. So I think it's pretty clear LSU officials failed to follow the rules in many of these cases. What the Department of Ed would say, you know, you're right, I can't speak to that.
Can you speak to where you think this goes from here?
You know, yeah, there are a few things that are immediate. On Friday, students are planning a protest on campus in response to the article and in response to the way LSU has handled these cases. There are student leaders, I believe over two dozen of them, who've called for the resignation of LSU officials who've mishandled these complaints. And I think people do want real action. This outside investigation that LSU is commissioning, don't expect any results from that until at least the spring. It may be revealing. I was told by an LSU official that a public summary of the findings will be made available. But in the meantime, you know, we'll continue to follow up on new leads and tips that we've received, and we will continue to report on these issues.
Kenny Jacoby, part of a team writing this very explosive story in USA Today. Kenny, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate you clarifying exactly where the salient points are in this story. We appreciate it, and all the best.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Wow, tough story to digest and to try to understand. We will take a break, get your reaction to that. More phone calls at 855-242-7285 when we come back.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Two big stories that we've talked mostly about today have been the LSU story that we just talked to our guest about, and the South Carolina search for the new head coach. We're taking all questions right now, and we'd love to hear from you at 855-242-7285. Let's go next to Joe, who is in South Carolina. Hello, Joe.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
I called you after the Auburn game, you know, and everybody was saying that South Carolina may just turn around, and I told you, no, Muschamp. And I told you I called him Muschamp because there's no chance.
I do remember that, yeah.
And I told you then, you know, it wasn't going to work out. Here's the deal, Paul. They need to get rid of probably at least two more and maybe a third one eventually, but they need to go to Tanner and say, look, you can go back and be baseball coach. And that he doesn't need to have any – keep his hands totally off hiring the next coach. And then they need to also get rid of the baseball coach that he hired, that he hired is no good. And like I said, he could go back and be baseball coach. But Ray Tanner is the problem over there. I mean, now one thing that people don't remember, when he was talking to coaches back then, he actually interviewed Lincoln Riley when he was offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. And I don't know if maybe Oklahoma said, hey – you don't want to go there. Bob Stoops going to retire in a few years, and you can have the keys to the city here or the team. So I don't know if that's what happened, but just think about if Ray Tanner had actually picked Lincoln.
Yeah,
Riley,
I think Lincoln had just left. Wasn't Lincoln at East Carolina first?
Yeah, he was actually at Texas Tech.
And okay, then Texas Tech. Okay.
When Leach got fired, and that guy, I can't remember, the defensive coordinator at Texas Tech, who was the interim coach, went and be the head coach at East Carolina. And Lincoln went there as offensive coordinator. And then he went to Oklahoma because he did such a good job at East Carolina. But I think
I'm not playing dumb here because I know Ray Tanner very well. Yeah. But you're not the first person that has said that. Where do you think he has gone wrong? I mean, other than Muschamp, I mean, giving Muschamp the extension was clearly a blunder. But what else is there about Tanner that you find so objectionable?
Well, he didn't hire a good baseball coach for one thing. He had a bunch of good prospects. You'd think he could maybe figure out who's a good baseball coach since he was. But yeah. I think he's over his head. He's a coach. You know, it's back when the Bear and all those guys, and they're head football coach and athletic director.
Right.
And just because you're a football coach doesn't mean you're a good athletic director. An athletic director needs to be, in essence, be a CEO of a major company. And I don't know that he's got
most of the new athletic directors are cut from a very similar cloth. They don't come from coaching backgrounds.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a Beamer fan. I mean, when he was there, he was in charge of special teams for Spurrier, and their special teams were terrible. I used to tell people, just because your last name's Beamer doesn't mean you can coach special teams. They were terrible. I can remember Clemson running kickoffs back or punts and everything else. So I don't think he's the answer. I don't know. I mean, as that guy said, called earlier about, you know, you're going to be recruiting against all these people. I almost had to laugh, though, when he said you're going to be recruiting against Georgia Tech. You know, give me a break.
Well, let me ask you, because I follow South Carolina pretty closely, and it does seem like, other than those maybe 3 or 4 years of Spurrier, and maybe Holt had a, you know, run briefly, this roller coaster has been going on a long time. I mean, is this program – Can you make this program consistently good?
I think potentially. I mean, you know, that guy told you after the Auburn game, they need to decide whether they're going to try to be, you know, contend for the SEC title and all that, or if they want to just be a good 8-3 team every year, maybe occasionally slip up and beat somebody. But I was actually graduated from South Carolina to bring back when Paul Dietzel was the coach of South Carolina. So I graduated in 73, and while I was there, my freshman year, they won their first and only ACC conference title. But, I mean, I think who they ought to go after is Tony Elliott at Clemson, the offensive coordinator at Clemson. I mean, he grew up in South Carolina, played high school football in South Carolina. That's who I think they should go after. I mean, because one thing they should do is try to damage Clemson as much as they can.
I mean, if you hire Tony Elliott, you do send a shot across the bow.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that, and I've covered a lot of coaching searches, but sometimes it just seems like you go to central casting and, okay, you know, give me the hot five coaches, but, you know, rarely do they ever really move the needle.
They've got the facilities there. They, you know, spent $50 million to build that new football building. Muschamp said, you know, that's what I need and all that. And you mentioned earlier they've gotten some good players. Muschamp didn't get any good players. He's got one or two here and there, but, I mean, their recruiting classes are always probably top 20. I mean, he didn't do anything. And I don't think he has any coaches there either. I mean, they brought in Tracy Rocker. He was a retread from Tennessee. And they brought back an offensive line coach when Spurrier was there. And, I mean, that offensive line coach is like the third highest offensive line coach paid in the country or something. So, I mean, they got a lot of money tied up in those coaches. And Muschamp, I mean, he hired Roper as his offensive coordinator for the first 3 years, 2 years. That's the guy that got him fired at Florida.
Right,
he was the offensive coordinator at Florida. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, Paul.
You can't. hey, thank you very much.
And then that guy, would rather say, the defensive coordinator he's got, he came from Auburn, and he'd never been a defensive coordinator before. And, I mean, the defense, of course, you saw what they did the last three games.
The defense got him fired.
No players. He has no talent.
That's a fair point. Hey, appreciate it very much, Joe. Caleb is in South Carolina as we continue to we'll just go ahead and hire the next coach for South Carolina right here tonight. Caleb, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, I got a serious question. Do Gamecock fans really think they can get Hugh Freeze?
I'm not sure they can, but, he's being talked about like he's inferior to their program.
I think he is, honestly, Paul. I don't think they have a chance to get him. I think if they could get Bobo to take the team, that would be their best bet because they are never going to be a 10-win program. If they win 10 wins, that's a great year for them.
Well, I mean, listen, they did that they did that 3 years in a row under Steve Spurrier, but that was a comet. It doesn't come around very often where not only do you get Spurrier, you just happen to catch Clemson while they're down. You also happen to have, South Carolina always has good players, but, I mean, you ran through a series of great players from Clowney to Gilmore to countless others that were really extraordinary, and you made the most out of it.
I agree. I got one more question for you, Paul.
Sure.
If you were building the team right now, who would you want at quarterback? Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, or Justin Fields?
That might be the best question I've heard all day. Let me go over that again because I would like to get some participation here. Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, or Justin Fields? Who would you take?
Personally, I'd take Trevor, but everybody seems to think that Justin is the best and Mac is just sleeping through the season and probably got a good chance to win the Heisman. Don't you agree?
Yeah, well, he does, and so do. By the way, Kyle Trask has suddenly emerged as well. And
he's having a great year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I would probably go with Trevor Lawrence because I think ultimately Trevor Lawrence is, he's looked the best since the first time I saw him play. I think he has the most potential. He is in total command. He's had very few bad games. I mean, the game against LSU, he had a couple of moments. That was that was a lost cause, quite frankly. I mean, LSU was a significantly better team.
Yeah, they were, defensively and offensively. Joey B was just unbeatable last year.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
By the way, okay, so we'll head to the final 30 minutes. A couple of topics on board, and I'd like to get your reaction to all of them. The question he just asked was a really good one. The South Carolina search, who would you hire? If you're Ray Tanner, let's not say this one or that one, who would you hire to be the next South Carolina coach? It's a critical choice, because this program, after the last year or two of Spurrier and almost 5 years of Muschamp, have been fairly dismal. I mean, one decent year in the group. And Spurrier's last year, he was the head coach for a couple of games. One of the last games of the year when they lost to the Citadel. So that was a disaster. And finally, my final question, I'm really curious, are we looking past this LSU story, or do we really not care that some serious allegations and malfeasance occurred? So what is a standard nowadays in intercollegiate athletics? The phone lines are open, and you can get in right now at 855-242-7285. The phone number is 855-242-7285. A lot on the docket, and we will get to your phone calls when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Continue. A lot of calls waiting, and Billy is in Mobile, Alabama. Billy, thanks, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, so I was calling. I told the person on the other end that my wife's actually a counselor and actually teaches it now, but she was a counselor at Ole Miss and also at South Alabama. And one of the things she would always stress to me is that, 97% of those assaults that happen on campus usually are never reported. And it's usually by the person that got assaulted.
Right.
But when you do report it, then there's a chain that has to start happening. And the first thing is the police department is supposed to call the Title IX coordinator and a counselor to put them in her corner. Because, the police department and everybody else is like, what were you wearing?
Sure.
Were y'all drinking? As if that's an excuse to have what happened happen. And so when I started hearing about this LSU case, I was thinking to myself, well, where was the counselor? Because they have to write down all that gets done. And those are provided by the university counselors.
You're absolutely, and I know very little, but I did a report many years ago and interviewed a rape victim, and you'll be nodding your head, and she told me all of what you've said, and said that by the end of it, you're made to feel as if you're shamed because of all the very salacious questions that have to be asked. Most victims just bail out.
Well, they don't want their name, spread,
right.
Go to court, get their name spread all over the place. And then if it goes sideways for whatever reason, they're looking, to blame somebody else for a situation that is unexcusable. And so I just wanted, I was just taken back by the fact that, so many, it looks like there is such a disconnect on so many different levels, including counselors and Title IX coordinators and all of that of the world. But unless they're being told that something's getting done or being done, they don't know, unless that individual comes in several days later. But then, the rape kit, that goes out the door, all those kind of things. There's no evidence at that point. And then
Billy, and you could address this with your spouse, but I mean, it's the culture that is of a concern, and we've all been part of cultures like that, whether it's the locker room in high school or junior high or military or wherever. And it's really scary. And the fact that, the facts of this case are incredibly disturbing.
Right, Paul. And I think there's probably going to be more to this story than we all know. I think it's just because it's not dead yet, is it? I mean, there's
I can tell you, I'm not an expert at very many things. I do follow the media pretty closely, and I've noticed already The national media this morning did a story on it. There's a story out tonight which is blaming Ed Orgeron, which I can tell you I have no earthly idea whether it's accurate or not. But there will be a feeding frenzy from certain segments of the media, rightly or wrongly, and anyone who thinks that you're going to bury this story, you don't understand the media.
Right. They're ravenous. I get it.
Yeah, and by the way, this is not this is not San Diego State here. I'm just using that as a – this is LSU, which is the reigning national champion, and they are going to draw a lot of attention.
Well, right, exactly, especially when there were players on the team who were, like, being treated with, what, right. Just go sit in your house and don't come out until we call you
it
out.
It doesn't help that the school's football program ran into trouble. The basketball program is under a bright – shining light. Not that the NCAA cares whether programs are above board or not. They really don't, based on what we've seen for many years. But I'm sure Scott Woodward down there is very concerned.
Yeah, he's going to lose a little sleep on this one. I think so too, Paul.
Hey, well, thank you for sharing that. Really appreciate it.
Hey, you're very welcome. Talk to you again.
Great to have you on. Thank you so much. Keith is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Keith.
Hello.
Oh. Hey there.
I wanted to, going back to the South Carolina job, if we look at the landscape, team judges, SEC football coaches, where would you rank the Gamecocks?
I am naive enough to think it's a good job. And the reason why I think it's a good job, it has a couple of key elements that help you qualify to be a good job. Number one, you have a passionate fan base. And I will tell you, having been to many games at Williams-Brice, they have an unbelievably passionate fan base, unlike some schools where fans are apathetic or really don't care. They have unbelievably great facilities. I've used that word twice now because the brand-new facilities at South Carolina, which just opened, are on the same level with the best in the industry. They have a good recruiting base. Now, they don't have a lot of tradition, but Clemson went nearly 40 years between championships, and they're now among the hottest teams in the country.
Well,
what do you think?
I would agree that the facilities are now finally very
right.
Outstanding. They're as far as recruiting, they have a huge Big Brother, complex
sure.
with Clemson being so outstanding, especially
Absolutely.
Over the last, decade. But I would just think that they're a second tier job when you look at the landscape of the entire SEC.
Well, I mean, listen, if you're looking at the SEC, you start with the obvious. I mean, there's Alabama, Georgia, Florida, LSU, and that's even before you finish the sentence. And then, there's Tennessee, which used to be, and, maybe again, but may not be. So those are what I gave you five schools, and I'm sure I've left out a number of really quality programs. But, yeah, I mean, they're not in the top five or six, but I still think they can command a really good coach.
Well, I just hope they haven't broke the bank.
But here's the issue. Usually, they're not competing.
So
but tell me this, Keith. They're not competing with anyone right now. It's not like there are six great openings. I mean, this may be the best opening of the offseason.
It may be, but it may be a time where Napier or even Hugh Freeze or especially Stark says, you know what, I'll wait till next year and see what else comes up.
Well, I don't think Napier will wait because I think he waited for this, but you very well may be right. I mean, Sark turned down Colorado, which seems like a good job, but it really isn't. Freeze, I personally think Freeze is looking at two other jobs next year. I don't think he's really that interested in this job. That's just an opinion, but What else do we do here? Hey, thank you for the call. We've had some great calls. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.